don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back. I gotta do right before they call
me home. Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is May 16th, 2012. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We have Mr. Calvin Mann. He was born and raised in Detroit's West Side to Reverend Columbus Mann and Ollie Bell Rosita Mann, along with his four brothers and two sisters. All siblings shared the enthusiasm and innate musical talent of their parents. This extraordinary ability did not go unnoticed by the entertainment community, enabling him to collaborate with a multitude of artists such as Regina Bell, Mr. Cheeks, Trick Trick, on Brewster Project soundtrack, Karen Clark, Sheard and the Clark Sisters, Curtis, Ice Cream Man, Seth, and Corndog, as well as appearances in various commercials. In 2008, Calvin and Clarence Barber produced a song called Encourage Me, I'm Young, and released it January 16, 2012 on iTunes. So tonight we're going to hear Calvin's story, and before I do that, let me just welcome Boyd to the show.
Yeah, first I want to say we welcome Calvin to the show, and we thank you for always tuning in every Wednesday night. And without further ado, we're going to just bring my man Calvin to formally introduce himself, and we're going to get it started. Thank you, everyone. Over to you, Calvin.
Well, how you guys doing tonight?
We blessed out here, man.
Oh, you got to be. Y'all putting in enough work, bro. It's nice to see you.
Appreciate it, man.
Two beautiful people work together. That's always a good thing.
Oh, man, thank you, man, for the kind words and the blessings, man, you know. Formally introduce yourself to him, Calvin, and let him know where you come from and what you do now.
Oh, well, first of all, I guess being born in the middle, I guess, is, you know, I try not to tell my age.
But, hey, man.
I thank God that I look young, but more importantly, my parents, my father was a gospel pioneer who brought Matty Moss Clark to the table. He's also the choir director on the back of the album, Oh Happy Day, which currently I'm investigating the story. Some true stories about that, according to some facts and some things that goes on with that song that my father had something to do with. As well as I come forward, I coached for numerous years, put over 40 young men in school. I myself, as a high school kid, was always involved in different things. You know, I sang at Magicals. I was on the basketball team, football team. I was involved in talent shows and everything. But because of my father, I didn't pursue the music like that. I guess a part of me at the time, being an adolescent, it was something about didn't want to be like my father, considering my mother and father had divorced after 20-some years. I come full circle because of the things that people had told me in life. I got kicked out of college believing the story of older men telling me I was supposed to go to school and pursue women. That's what college was supposed to be about, you know, not knowing as a young man that that was not the case, you know. I come out of that, and at a ripe young age, I have a son. You know, I would get whisked off, do the, you know, just the typical things. I didn't want my son born in this world without my last name, so I eloped with his mom, you know. Went through quite a bit as a young man, but none of it to I guess to the credit, none of it was as bad as it may have seemed. And it was 1992. I was sitting in an all-white. I was working because I always used to hear people speak. My people, black people, I wasn't taught racism. So my mom never put that into our lives, in our home. I was never taught that, so I never pursued it as an issue. Even after roots and all of that, it was never an issue for me. And I had come full circle. I was working at an all-white daycare. It was all these little white kids, because I wanted to see, you know, why my people always spoke culturally in a defeatist purpose type way. You know, it was always something, they spoke in a way and they continue to speak in a way that speaks power to another culture, and it kind of diminished themselves. So, make a long story short, while I was working in this daycare, you know the typical story. I'm a very spiritual person. The wind kind of blew. All the kids were in the basement at the daycare. The daycare was in the house. And the words, "encourage me, I'm young," came to me in 1992. So I was shocked. And the young lady's sister walked through the door. And she was in middle school. And I asked her to draw a picture and put everything in it for kids. Everything the kids were involved in, put it in there. So I took the shirt, I took the information, and before I told anybody, I took the paper, I went over to Art's Knitting Mill in Royal Oak, Michigan. I had them print this shirt up, and I put the shirt on her. And she wore it to school. And I asked her, you know, what was the result? She was like, all the teachers kept touching me. They wanted to know what I meant by encouragement. I'm young. And if you would if I would have known then, I had this I had kept the shirt so long I decided to throw it away, but I had the shirt had encouraged me over the top in the box. It had all this art faces, music notes, books, bicycles, everything kids was into, sports, everything, and at the bottom it had me young. You know, it encouraged me. I'm young. So I took it to my uncle after that little episode. And we decided to put it on the basketball team. Well, little I know, the kids on the basketball team, they started researching and coming up with quotes. And so as they were coming up with quotes, they would put the quotes on the back of the shirts. This became the shooting shirts for the basketball team I was coaching at Ferndale High. And all the kids wanted to be a part of our basketball team. When we had tryouts, we would have 150 kids in the gym trying out to be a part of our basketball team. And, you know, we couldn't figure it out. Our kids would be warming up. Parents would stop at the court and read the back of the shirts. So we had built a program up. We had kids that went on to play at Penn State, Michigan State, Akron, numerous universities, Minnesota, a million D2 schools, Fair State, Northwood. We had some kids go on to pursue their own dreams. But all in all, every kid that we had associated ourselves with, Rob, has done some very positive things. They're very, you know, they're good fathers. Mm-hmm. They're all sorts of young men as involved that played for us. And we have numerous of stories, and they're doing good things.
So, that's a blessing.
Yes, and that was the beginning, and I had got out of coaching with my son. I was very disappointed that I didn't get to, I was an associate head coach with my uncle as the varsity coach, and I didn't get the job, and they didn't realize who had been doing all the work. Needless to say, I went on, and I coached my son's middle school team, and then I completely got out of coaching when my son enrolled in the high school. So I fast forward to 2004, and I'm out of coaching, and I recognize tons of children getting killed. You know, and I wasn't a big TV watcher then, but now that I'm not coaching or anything, you get caught up in the cultural things, you know, coming home, watching the news, the basics. And that's when I prayed. A friend of mine had called me. He was like, well, he said when you You said when you get out of coaching, you was going to make encourage me. I'm young as a clothesline. I said, you're right. So I started praying. Little did I know, in 2004, my mission to start encourage me. I'm young is I started laying shirts where kids were getting killed all over the city of Detroit in 2004. Mm-hmm. On the back of the shirt, God has given me over 200 and some original quotes. So on the back of their shirts are these powerful quotes that goes on the back of them. And I just started getting up 5 o'clock in the morning watching the news. Wherever a kid was getting killed, I would go to the death site, say a prayer, and leave a shirt offering hope to the family.
Amen.
And,
amen.
And that's how we got started. That's how we got started.
That's a blessing, man, that, you know, you chose something to not only, you know, help the community, but to give back to all over, you know what I mean? Because that'll pass down to other communities to exhale and do the right things as well, you know?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes,
and,
I'm
going
to pass the mic over to my missus.
Hi, Calvin. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Hey, I wanted to ask you, you know, I know you grew up with your parents, you know, they were pretty religious, and but still, how were you able to stay away from the gangs and the drugs that are so rampant out there in Detroit?
Well, actually, part of my journey includes that in 1987, that's when I had began to walk away. I wasn't taught drugs. See, my uncles, who was in the Korean War and all, I had seen drugs used on my uncle's lives. And my mom, who was the second oldest of 11, her oldest brother passed away, her brothers and all, they were all in the sports, but a couple of her brothers went to the Korean War and got caught up in the heroin use and things like that. And so we were kind of steered away from it early. It was so many of us because it's 7 of us. Then I have 3 other, you know, half siblings, but it was 7 of us, 5 boys and 2 girls. You know, we would consider ourselves a gang. So, you know, even as a young man, I was jumped on and was almost initiated into a gang. They wanted me to, and I would never do it. You know, so my family, being as big as it was, you know, we had to fight it off. And I don't think a lot of people really understand our environment, including ourselves, because that environment in itself resulted in a lot of people dying. And what I mean that, you know, we give praises to several things, but when you hand people, when you hand, in our society now, when you infiltrate the neighborhoods of any kind, with drugs and money and the influence, when you don't have jobs and a proper education, you will become this negative environment. It's easy because so many people will seek out family, so many people, you know, they'll find other ways of doing it because naturally your spirit craves love. So wherever you would see or feel, these are the areas that people would gravitate toward. And so we were able to avoid, when my mom pulled us out of the city, we went to Royal Oak Township, which is right across 8 Mile. So it was no different. I'd still see all my friends that I was growing up with off of 8 Mile in Detroit the same way. But the difference was I was able to focus up on, I had a different outlet for sports. And so I played football and things like that and didn't lose a football game to basically my junior year, the end of my sophomore year, junior year, in high school, and that was devastating. But the people in my life, my uncles and things like that, they were all sports figures. So those were things, because my history in sports run big at Ferndale High School. Like my Uncle Earl was the first All-American at Ferndale High School. So, you know, it was natural for my mom, who graduated from the original Ferndale, which was Lincoln, it was natural for her, you know, for us to come through there and be offered a different type of education. And I'm not going to lie and say, and, you know, when I got kicked out of college, I went on my own. I didn't come back home. And I was pretty young. I got my own place. And, I mean, there's so much stuff that I did. I didn't get into drug selling until the summer of 86, well, the summer of 87. In the summer of 87, I walked through, I was actually did a little drug selling, and I couldn't take it because I knew I wasn't raised that way. And I walked out of the drug house and went to the recreation, and Mr. Jim Curry gave me a whistle. And I tell that story that he gave me a whistle. That whistle changed my life because I got passionate about something that somebody wasn't passionate. I was a good basketball player. Could have been even better. But the people that was handling me, we fell upon nepotism, we fell upon neighbor, we fell upon racism. I mean, it's just a number of things that you come across that people have opinion about you that they didn't, you know, that they put on kids. And I've been watching adults take education and abuse it on kids for years. So I was one of those kids. And knowing my story, I was not supposed to be where I am today. And a lot of kids wouldn't make it. But I was, it was something about, I just didn't want another kid to be told what I was told. And so once he gave me that whistle, I ended up coaching. And that first year of coaching, I was in the paper. We won gold medals. I had Miss Basketball on the team. I had a girls' team that won gold medal. On the boys' team, I had Cole, Mr. Basketball, and I had a bunch of kids to go on to play college that was on the boys' team. And this is the first time I had ever coached. And so that's what really got me away. To me, I thought drug selling was easy. So it was easy for me to walk away from it because I found it to be too easy. You don't have to talk, and you don't have to, you know, these were things that I found about it that just, you know, once I seen somebody freebase, I was done with it. It was like, I know this is not something I want, you know, to do with my life. And so when he gave me the whistle, it changed me. I began to go to coaches' clinics, you know, meet all these great coaches, and literally as a young, hungry person, sit and listen and learned how the real parts in the real game of how to develop a player, you know, drills and skills, communication. I learned so much from going to the coach's clinic that transformed my life really into what it is today.
That's right. And, you know, it only takes one person to change a young kid's life and to redirect them into the right path. Just like you said, you got handed a whistle. You know, all you have to do sometimes is just encourage a young child or a young teenager that they can do the right things, that, you know, that they are good at something, just to give them that encouragement and that positive feedback. You know, that's all it takes is to change somebody's life.
I think what has happened to us culturally is because we spent so much time in front of television, and this is for all cultures, I mean the American culture, culturally we project our failures as a way of wanting to be successful, like things that we see. And we fail to realize that it's a method, you know, to getting to where you have to get. I mean, like I said, it's just, you know, for myself, it was coaching. And then it was funny how I came back across the same paths of people who rejected me as a player now needed me as a coach. I was the youngest coach at Ferndale. I had girls varsity basketball as a coach. I was 22 years old.
Wow.
I was coaching varsity basketball at 22 years old. And I got come away from that, you know, and my passion was really enormous for youth at that time because I was always helping people even when I was in high school.
Right.
But it became enormous that I could make a difference in a kid's life just by being present and being positive. And so, you know, in some areas, you know, that passion had consumed me. And then, like I said, fast forward to who I had become in 2004, I still was egotistical because God was giving me so much. I thought, because I had, again, here's my point again. When I got out of coaching and I took a step back and I was working, my ego wanted me to sell drugs again. But this time, when I seen I was messing with real estate, I was doing comedy, I was trying to find my way, you see, because I was out of coaching and I didn't want to deal with the pain of coaching no more. So I began to try comedy. I went to real estate, you know. Then I looked at drugs again. And it was funny how when I looked at drugs, I found, me personally, that all the drug dealers had it the wrong way. So it was something I just didn't want to do, you know. And then I was off the clock from my job at Northwest Airlines for a second, and I came back on the clock, and God had been blessing me, but I wasn't paying him no attention. And honestly, at the end, it was December 28th, 2004, I was carpooling with a friend because I was my ego, my materialism and everything was being reduced to get to where I am. And, you know, I had cars repoed. My daughter had eczema, so I had to take a last chance agreement at the job. I got played there. You know, it was just a number of things. And I was back on the clock, and I was telling a friend, I was like, you know what, these T-shirts and everything, they might be sweet. I said, but I ain't making no money. In the meantime, I had a pocket full of money, still on the wrong mentality. And I walked into, he went into credit union, he said, man, shut up, God gave you that, you're going to do what you, I said, man, all right, whatever. And he walked in, Lucinda, to the credit union where I sat in the car. So about 2 minutes go by, I said, let me go in here and reopen my account. When I walked to the corner booth, it's a redhead female. I had never seen this woman a day in my life. But as I sit down to reopen my account, she kept asking me what I do. And so I happened to have a card. And all year long, I had been putting my business card, my first business card, had the quote, I'm a child. Can you discipline me? I'm a teen. Can you have patience with me? I'm a young adult now. Can you love me for all the things I'm not? Encourage me. I'm young. And that was on the card. And so I threw the card on the desk, and she went to screaming. And so you know the old joke, if a white woman is screaming, everybody is coming. And so the whole booth, the whole booth, everybody in the credit union is in this booth. And she, only God knew what I had prayed. And she said, do you know you could change the world with this? You saved my son's life. She said, and the only reason why no one, I took this to the same three schools that my son was kicked out of, and the only reason why they wouldn't call you is because you're African American. She said,
wow.
But this,
thank you, homie.
She said, this, you literally could change the world. And that's when I realized what had been given to me, because I only prayed that. No one knew that that's what I asked for. She didn't know. But here it is at the end of the year, and she made that statement. And so we get back in the car. Of course, you know, my friend was laughing all the way to the car.
Mm-hmm.
All the way to the car. We got back in the car, and he, right now, he is one of my, I'm telling you, he has watched me faith walk this thing.
My man.
He says all the time, he's like, man, I have never seen this a day in my life. He said, man, I've watched you this whole time. And it's funny. Some people think being an overnight sensation means you're literally an overnight sensation. He said, but
mm-hmm.
when the world comes on, when you look up and your kids and his kids all across the United States wearing that Encourage Me, I'm Young shirt, like these other kids, or like my niece, or like my friend's daughter, when they realize what they have, He said, man, it's going to be crazy. He said, because he has just been watching it. You know, him and his wife are big supporters. And
amen.
And that's where we are. Well, this is where we are, and, you know, there's more to go, you know.
Amen. That's what's happening, man. And give them the website, Kevin, if somebody wanted to purchase your merchandise. Give them your website.
Well, the thing that I'm excited about is where all our T-shirts and hats is now. I have been rejected by grants, and so we're going to use all our T-shirts and hats to fund our own nonprofit. So the website is www.emiyworld.com. That's emiyworld.com.
My man, you know, and tell them what you got on your line that they'll be definitely interested in. You got more than hats and shirts for them, or what you got for them?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Brother Rob, we, man, I mean, with our clothes been on Ron's House, NFL Network, MTV, BET, and we're looking for the opportunity. We just revamped the site, and we're going to do, you know, there's a couple of things that we're doing different with the site. Coming in the fall, we're going to offer any and every high school across the country that want to use our product in their school colors and one of our quotes. We're going to give them $7 a shirt on fundraising. Every time they sell a shirt, they will receive $7 back to the school.
Amen.
Because we want the message to go globally. We already have it printed in every language across the globe. We also, we're able to, you know, we got the screens already set up for any other culture, any other language. We also have it set up for the deaf. And we're going to be dropping that shirt this summer in sign language, you know, and which is one of my partners, his daughter, is, you know, so we're excited about that. But, you know, some of the things that we're looking to do is get our programming a little tighter and then start spreading it across the country. We do the peer mentoring format. You know, right now I mentor all the boys. I get them once a month at Finney High School. And so I'm hoping we can reduplicate. Yep, the 9th through the 12th grade. So once a month I get over 250 boys. And what we want to try to do in the beginning of the fall is we want to start going at and getting more and more results. We've taken jobs to them, different speakers, but now we want to use the Encourage Me, I'm Young format and go into the schools and make that once a month all about uplifting, encouraging them, pumping them up, put the message on them, get them to compete academically, let them know that there's some people out here that love them. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like constantly pushing that message. The other thing that we have online, we got one more scene to shoot for the Emmy song, and then we're coming with the video showing the different deaf sites and the different places where we have made the shirts and the song being powerful. You can get that on iTunes, Amazon, Zoom. That's the Emmy theme song by Calvin Mann and Claire. And so we're doing a fundraiser this Sunday. The fundraiser is for, man, this is such a, I gotta tell you guys this story.
Come on, man, put that on out here. You know what's happening.
In October last year, my son's mom told me about a friend she was working with at DHS. Her name happened to be Z Pace. And so I walked in and I met this lady. Come to find out she has brain cancer, right? This October.
Oh, man, I knew that.
Right. So we're vibing because she's got so much history in community service that, you know, she was kind of like being a mentor. And she was trying to teach me. And at the same time, you know, she was like, I love what you're doing, so how can I help you? I'll say, well, it looks like your strength is raising money. And so I was like, why don't you? She said, okay, good, because I'm going to be out of DHS. I'm going to need to create a job for myself, so I'll be your funding chair. And so she showed me her resume one day, bro, and her resume was 7 pages, man. She condensed her resume down to one page just off of one job, right?
Wow.
And so I'm looking at this. I tell her, after seeing her seven pages, I said, V, we need to be doing a scholarship or something for you. Why? I said, they need to be throwing a parade, because this lady, what she's done, the city, I mean, you have these programs. Man, she was at DHS 20-something years. She was over St. Cecilia school board, the church, everything for over 20-something years. She helped start Thaw. She took Thaw from four counties to 71 counties and introduced it to St. Louis and Milwaukee. This lady, she raised it one year. She raised $805,000 for people to say they heat, lights, gas, to keep them from the dark. This is touching what she had done. So January come, and we throw the pancake breakfast. Our first fundraiser was the pancake breakfast. So we throw the pancake breakfast and bring in the community. I do my thing, and we had other people come in and do their thing. And, you know, because, you know, like Better Detroit Youth Movement, I'm also the co-founder of that as well. And so, with my man Jay and the whole nine. So we had Jay and them come in. You know, we had a nice thing. We had a poet, everything, all you can eat. The community came in. It was nice. A lot of people were shocked that we had it like that. And right after that, we was planning a bowling event.
Mm-hmm.
So this month, we actually was going to, coming out of the bowling event, we was going to be doing a golfing fundraiser right now with the Good Fathers Only polos, all that. All that stuff you see I've been trying to sell, that's what we was going to launch it with. So when it came back, the cancer, I guess, kicked up, man. And after that, she had two strokes.
Wow.
And, you know, the tumor grew. You know, I didn't hear from her. And then her husband pulled her up to the shop to talk to me. They came over. It was just before she had the two strokes. And she was like, I'm doing good. I'm fighting, you know. Because she had been wearing her pink Emmy to therapy, to her chemo. And brother, Saturday when I went to see her, I hadn't heard, you know, seen from, I was talking to her daughter. You know, I kept asking her daughter, give me some good news, give me some good news, give me some good news. She was like, Carol, I can't give you no good news, but I can tell you one thing. I sat in front of my mama with your shirt on, and your name was the only name she remembered.
It's the name.
Right? And so it took pretty much about 3 weeks after that, which came to like this past Saturday, I was taking the tickets to her daughter, and I went over there. And her husband let me go upstairs while she was in the bed and see her. And as soon as I come through, she just started smiling, you know.
That's what's
up. And I, you know, I show her the tickets, and she said, no scholarship. I said, oh, yeah, baby, I told you we was going to do this. It come hell or high water, you will have a scholarship as long as I got air in my lungs.
Amen.
We will be doing this Z-PACE scholarship, because what you have done for these people in this city, and they may not know it. I know it. A few people know it. But know this. This is going down. She kept saying, no scholarship. And started, you know, and began to cry. And I said, hey. You know, I just kept talking with her, you know. I'm quite sure, you know, because her husband was telling me, you know, Cal, you know, she has some good days, some bad days, but, you know, just keep talking with her, you know, she don't know or whatever. And so as I began to, you know, constantly communicate with her, what I recognized was a grown woman had been reduced to where she looked like she's 12 years old. The cancer is just breaking her down, and I couldn't, that picture I had to wrestle with. But before I left, you know, I let her know, you know, I love you, And she said, "I love you more than you even know." And I said, you know, when I left on that note, I got to the porch and just broke down. Because I thought, when I got outside and I thought to myself, Rob, we do not appreciate people while they are alive. We all, sometimes we wait. And sometimes you can't tell. I don't like waiting. I'm going to tell you now how I feel about you. So, you know, when you transition, you already know that Cal loves me. You see what I'm saying? I think it's important that we give people their flowers now. And so we're
right,
doing
that's
that,
so true, Calvin. You know, true. You know, you go to funerals of people and you hear their life story and you're like, wow, I didn't even know that they had done that, or I didn't know they were into that, or I didn't know this about them, or I didn't know that about them. And you learn so much and you learn to admire them, but by then it's too late because they're not here anymore. You know, and that's true with our own families, our aunts, our uncles. There's so many things that we just don't know. You know, we're so busy with our own lives that we don't really sit down and talk to people and pay attention to what other people are really, really doing in their lives and some of the fascinating, amazing things that they've accomplished in their lives.
Yeah, I think, and that's one of the things that I try to explain to a lot of people. I think a lot of times we're over-concerned about what someone can do for us versus for what someone has done for others. And and it's the same thing that we demand from family. If a family member don't do something for you, you automatically throw them in the garbage can saying, well, they couldn't do something for you. Well, how about discovering that really family is the same thing as a friend, and the inner workings are the same. You can't depend on family no more than you can depend on a friend unless they are dependable people that you can.
Right. Yeah,
and a lot of times we have placed a burden. Uncle Charlie didn't, because I was like that. I was young, and I didn't understand why my mother still, you know, after her sister may have played her on one end, why she still gave. You know what I'm saying? Because that's how she was. And to, people have to do who they really are. You know, they say, oh, why you do that? Why you fall for that? Why are you so-and-so? Why does your family treat you that way? They treat you wrong. No, because this is who this person really is. Maybe they only know to give to everybody. Instead of condemning them, how about loving them? Instead of, you know, because one of our quotes is, hating someone is loving yourself less. If you is more concerned about what someone had did wrong to you and never figure out about what's on the other side of that wrong, then you are stuck behind the very wrong that you despise them for. Now, one of my quotes is, haters is steps. So, Klein, you can't let someone, what another person done to you, hold you back. You
That's right.
Who
That's
you are.
Right. You got to keep it rolling.
And you have to keep going. So, you know, that's, you know, I just, you know, and matter of fact, I just want to tell you guys, I like I said, I'm just blown away by you two guys working together and doing things together and the pictures together and, you know, being a husband and wife. I mean, that's just such an example for other people and other families and things like that, because what you guys are creating is a legacy. And I try to explain that to other people. Why not work with the person that you do love, the person that's close
right.
to you?
Right.
You know, why not do that? You know, why can't we? You know, another person that taught me that was, I don't know if you guys met the brother that do Samaritan's Feet.
I'm not familiar.
Yeah, well, Samaritan's Feet is a brother that came to the United States to play basketball and everything. But the brother, what he did was, he's putting shoes on over 2 million people worldwide.
Wow.
He started out as a dream. But him and his wife, when I met him, was doing what you guys are doing.
Amen.
And now their thing, that was, what, almost two, three years ago? I seen Samaritan's Feet on I think 60 Minutes of one of these shows where they didn't, you know, gave all these shoes out, over 3-4 million pairs of shoes worldwide, and he's looking to do it everywhere, and they travel all across the globe putting shoes on people that you would least expect to have shoes, and it all started from a dream.
Amen. And I just want to tell you too, Kevin, man, you know, I take my hat off for what you have accomplished as well. And I want to thank you for your kind words and, you know, thanking you just for recognizing the work that me and my wife does together. And we started this in 09, and we didn't dream of having things in play like we do. We was just two people doing my first book, The Streets Don't Love You Back, and my wife edited that book, and redid that whole book for me. So, you know, everything started off with the message and encouraging these kids out here. And I also grew up right there in Detroit, you know what I mean, in the Black Bottoms on these sides, you know. So that's where my story all began, that, you know. And, you know, thank God for my mother. She taught me right from wrong as a kid. So even though I did a lot of wrong, I also knew right from wrong. So it was easy for me to go back that way as time went on down the stretch, you know what I'm saying? So just say thank you for all you do as well.
Oh, man, you know, like I said, and you know, Father's Day is coming. You know, we can't forget about to talk about how important we really are, you know. And Father's Day is coming, and, you know, that's one of my goals as well, is to make fatherhood such a relative thing. So our second site that we'll be launching probably in the next 2 weeks will be thegoodfathersonly.com, where we are going to have resources for fatherhood on this website, because my for-profit is called Good Fathers Only LLC, where we do jackets, shirts, hats, all of that. And so what we're trying to do is make fatherhood by having become the Yellow Pages for fatherhood. So if it's a resource for fatherhood, we want to be the ones that you come click and see. And when you come click and see, that apparel, golf wear, robes, and everything will be sitting there for us as men, because I think the royalty of fatherhood has been diminished by the verbal placement of dismissing men and the importance of men. And because, you know, and Lucinda, don't take this the wrong way. A lot of women, sometimes they do, you know, sometimes they speak up, but really, there is no negative statistic when the father is involved or either have the children. All the negative statistics for children stem from single-family households of mothers. And I think that's a way, you know, we, of course, there's a lot of mothers that raised their kids and kept them from harm. You see what I'm saying? Like my mom, she raised 5 boys and 2 girls. Yeah, it kept us from harm. It kept us from prison. But balance-wise, when I see my son and the involvement of me and his mom in his life, I see such a different Calvin man. You see what I'm saying? There's a difference when you have both present and speaking that into the kid's life. And, you know, I feel as though I'm like, and I might, and again, this might be that ego thing that I talked about, Rob, Lucinda, but, you know, I like to think I'm an MVP, the most valuable parent. You see what I'm saying?
Because in these times
right now, we need the men, because remember in the 90s, we had women saying, I don't need no man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't need no man. We don't need no man. Not everybody screaming. We need men, because you learned the value of the men was very, very high. And the men need to be involved, and the men need so much help now. Men, look at these men. Look at the little boys, man. Look at the 18-year-old boys now, or the 17-year-old. They can't, and this don't have nothing to do with the sagging pants thing. The majority of it is because they don't even know what the hell a belt is.
So without a doubt.
But they don't know the proper use of a belt. And then if you really watch them, they hold their pants like a skirt, like they used to curtsy back in the 50s when the women had the big dresses on. They were
already knowing, man.
Yeah.
You know? So any other things you got for the viewers tonight, Cal, as far as any other events that you're coming up besides the ones you spoke on? Do you have anything else on the floor?
Well, we're probably going to come back with our third annual Father's Day basketball game on Father's Day at Northwest Activity Center. We're putting together a summer league for our 8 and under kids. To mentor, we're going to put an entrepreneurship program on those kids, start teaching those kids entrepreneurship, and then we're going to get ready, get my son and a few of these other kids that's in my program ready for football. I'm a big football kid myself.
My man.
You know, I would be remorseful not to say that my son that graduated from college has his own company. It's called Pale Green Consulting. He's in touch with some people out of California. It's a green project, and it's very, very powerful. He has a CD, Jesus Got Swag, and does the gospel hip-hop. Very,
Amen.
Very good at that. And, you know, it's just a number of things. You know, like I said, with J-Num, I'm part of the Better Detroit Youth Movement, so we got a scholarship fair coming up, and then we got the Million Fathers March, the first day of school, that type of thing. And, I mean, we just going to keep... We're going to keep banging, and then sooner or later, like I said, when it's our turn, and, you know, like they say, hunting ain't fun when the rabbit got the gun. So, you know.
Oh, ain't no doubt. It's one of my favorite chants, homie.
So,
you already know.
When it's my turn, we're going to paint the country Emmy, brother, and good fathers only. So we just not going to stop, and I really, once again, appreciate the opportunity. Again, anytime. You people in Los Angeles and wherever your listeners are from, anytime they want to get involved, they want to donate, go to emmyworld.com. If you want to purchase, send me a little note. We'll get the shirt out to you. Right now we banging them golf polos for the fathers with the matching head, you know. So we really just not going to stop, bro. If you see, I'm on about 4 or 5 fan pages, and then when I launch that I Am Detroit piece, it's going to be sick. So we're getting very, very close. And, you know, pray for me. I'll pray for you guys, and I really appreciate this opportunity.
Oh, without a doubt, Kev. And also, when you get time, log on to our website and join that movement page and put all your information up there as well. A lot of people go to our movement page and know of us and network with us across the world. So definitely go on there and put your profile up and all your information and get in the loop on the Streets of Love You Back .com page as well.
Okay. Sure.
All right, sounds like a winner, my brother. I'm going to let the missus have the last words, the last announcements tonight, but we want to just tell all our viewers and our fans to log on once again to that website. Give it back out one more time, Calvin.
It's emiyworld.com.
All right. Y'all heard that, ladies and gentlemen. And once we hang up off the air, we're asking all our viewers and our fans to go to that website, learn about what Kevin is doing, and any kind of way you can be of help to that movement to encourage youth and help them out, please join what he's doing back his way as well. And also, I just want to let all the fans and viewers know that me and my wife have launched you know, several of my songs out there on various online stores, and we just did that Saturday. So it's going to take a couple weeks or so for it to hit everywhere, but it's going to be on iTunes in the USA and New Zealand and Europe and Japan and Mexico and various countries, you know, United Kingdom and on. So we asking everybody to support that Streets Don't Love You Back movement and support our music and also support our clothesline, the Streets Don't Love You Back clothesline. And you can log on to our online store as well at www.thestreetsandloveyouback.name.com. You can also check out both of the books, The Streets and Love You Back and Never Hit a Woman. And you can also check out our Change Reality show, Keep It Real show. You just have a lot of fun browsing through the Streets and Love You Back movement page and learning, getting educated. Resources is there for you, and just reaching out not only to help yourself but help someone else as well. So God bless. Take care. And for everybody, always remember, the streets don't love you back. Over to the missus, and thank you very much, Kevin, again.
All right, thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to go back a little bit to what you were talking about. And, you know, I think that your new website that you're planning is an awesome tool, and I'm sure that it'll be used, like you said, like the Yellow Pages, where they'll go to that. You know, we have to come back to, you know, family. You know, there is a reason why there is a mom and a dad, and it's because the children do need the representation from both of them. And, you know, when the parents can't get along and the kids are kind of stuck in the middle of these problems, you know, it creates problems within them. And, you know, if you don't, the parents don't get along, you know, it would be great if they could just walk away from each other as friends or not friends, but don't degrade each other, don't talk down about each other, and let the kids still know that they can come to mom, they can come to dad, that they can love both parents, you know, and not to make the child feel bad, you know. And that's just one of the biggest problems that we have. Other, you know, the other problems are, you know, absent fathers. We have some absent mothers as well, but you know, our society, that, you know, when drugs came in, it took a lot of our fathers away. You know, fathers went to war. They got, you know, psychiatric illnesses and killed, you know, because of the drug use. And, you know, it was brought back to our country. I mean, there's so many different problems, you know, but we can't sit here and continually blame all those problems for the things of today. We need to, like you and I and Rob, you know, we're trying to make changes and trying to educate the youth to let them know that, you know, they don't have to let all these things from the past hold them down, and they don't have to have these negative images of themselves, and then, you know, that they can win, they can achieve, they can accomplish something great. You know, there is hope, and that's the thing that we're trying to let them know. There is hope. There is, you know, there's so many things that you can do. Don't let people tell you that you can't.
Oh, yes. We always say that the word can't. Can't is a coward that never tried. You know,
that's right.
And you have to, we have to, and then just speaking on the whole parenting and coming back, the one thing that parents really don't like to look at, and if you're a parent, you should evaluate it from this view. And this is what has allowed us to be successful in parenting. One, remove yourself, then look at your child and see yourself. Two, viewing the what you did in your past, knowing that through your seed it's going to be reciprocated, so it's going to show back up. So I tell parents that the things you do today will show up in your kid tomorrow. And three, in every parent, both good and bad, there is a child that didn't get encouraged. And that is the detachment that it shows up on your kids. So if you're looking at when you go to a school and you see these kids is always in trouble, they always doing bad things, they always want to, that's why they know that all they have to do is go to the house. And then when you go to the house, the biggest problem, the poorest problem with education and why they were able to get away with the things that they were able to get away with is because the parents detachment from the school, you know. And then if you didn't have a successful life in school, it was kind of hard for a lot of parents to even go to the school. So when they go to the school, they go into the school with the anger from their childhood. And that piece is really what's wrong with education. It's really what's wrong with the teachers. It's really what's wrong with the administrators. Because in all those kids and people, there is a child that never got encouraged. And that hence why that's more right. Adults is wearing encouraged meow meow versus kids. Because in every adult, no matter who I come across, there's a kid that didn't get encouraged. And so we have to push that message, and we're going to continue to do so. And you're absolutely right about the parents don't listen to us. You're absolutely right.
You know, and the other thing, too, is that society has, you know, played men and women against each other and have degraded each other against each other as well, you know. And we need to come back to you know, good, clean, wholesome entertainment, I guess. You know, we need, young men need to, you know, respect young women, and young women need to respect young men. And it's just when there's that lack of respect, that's when, you know, all these bad things happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not a perfect world. We can't change it overnight, but, you know, like you know, we can be here to encourage and give hope and educate.
Well, you know, it's like, I know you guys heard about the story with the lady in Florida getting 20 years because
right.
she prevented from getting beat. And
right.
the thing that I don't know or can't conceive, and I had this concept, and I've reached out to like 3-4 different women, so I'm going to be talking with them again tomorrow because I had a concept for women. And then this concept is very, very powerful in women. And I want them to have it, you know, because my program is geared toward young males and adult males. So, you know, people was always say, well, what you doing for the girls? About the girls, what are we doing for the women? Because why? Women, you get 11% less pay and you're the head of household. That's economics. That's economics.
Okay.
You're now the head of household. And over
right.
50% of the homes, the women make more money than the men. And so
right.
It's not really about the money. We have made it about the money, but raising healthy kids and everything else is never about the money. When it was in the 40s, in the 50s, the man was the hit breadwinner. Was it about the money then? No.
Right.
So now, when the woman is the breadwinner, we're going to allow greed, materialism, and everything else destroy our kids? Well, we can't. If you're the breadwinner, you have to have the same mindset of family as the man did when he was a breadwinner. Yeah, a lot of men made a lot of erroneous decisions. A lot of men did a lot of things. But more importantly, financially, whoever the breadwinner is, ultimately, is for the family. And so we've gotten away from that. Women, HIV, domestic violence, fights, the divorce rate. When you start looking at women and the things that women need to get themselves, you know, I was telling someone earlier today, you know how they say the statement is, I'm a queen. Yeah, you hear that all the time. Treat me like a queen. Okay, well, evaluate queen. What does a queen do? Sit on her ass and have others wait on her. That is a queen. You can take it back to the beginning of the time, whoever the queen was, even when you watch the movie The Ten Commandments, even when the girl, the young lady in Spain who helped finance the slave trade and all of that, when you take it back, they were sitting on their ass and they were making decisions based upon being a queen. Well, don't be a queen. Give me a Coretta Scott King. Give me somebody who going to get on with me. Somebody, if I turn to the right, they turn into the right. If I'm in a brawl, somebody going to put their back next to mine, and we going to go out together. Give me somebody
right.
who going to love me for me and let me love them for them. You see what I'm saying? Because those are
right.
the elements that is needed in this time. You don't need a queen because a queen don't do a damn thing. And they can take it how they want to take it and understanding, but the real analogy of a queen, you're not doing nothing. Real talk. And so with women pull themselves away from that. We was talking about hair weave, and she was like, Cal, well, why are you cutting in the hair weave? I said, a little girl, 2 years old, should not be getting hair weave in her hair,
right.
but because her
right.
mother don't know how to do her hair, because all she's been getting is hair weaves, now the two-year-old baby hair is being destroyed for
right.
hair weaves.
Right.
Yeah. And that's a ridiculous industry. So let's get off of some of those things, but women can do some profound things. Medicine. You guys, look at the cancer walks all over the country. Phenomenal. But when it comes to your rights, I don't think you're fighting enough, and I created this thing. So, Linda, look for this thing in the next week because the logo will be ready. I don't want to talk about it now, but when you see it, you're going to be like, oh, I want to be a part of this. I think every woman, and that's why I was looking for like four different women. I got a sister in Houston. I got another young lady. She's a pastor. And then I'm waiting to hear back from this one young lady that's a nurse. And another young lady says she wanted to be involved. She's a hard worker. But that woman that sits down there in Florida, yeah, 20 years. 20 years she got. That don't make no sense.
Right.
Y'all, as a woman, y'all shouldn't be taking none of this stuff. It's your turn. It's your time. And you need to be restructuring how we do things and protecting the family just based on a financial point of view.
Exactly. And going back to her story, I think, you know, laws don't always need to be cut and dry. They need to be looked at in a different, you know, every situation is different. And, you know, I think they need to start taking that into consideration, you know, instead of just, I mean, some laws are cut and dry and that's it. You know, you get 10 or 20 and some are like, well, you know, we don't know. We got to look into this. We got to, you know, I think every situation is different. And that lady is, you know, totally, she had a master's degree. She was educated. She was doing the right thing. She was trying to protect herself. And instead of doing a warning shot, which is not in the laws or whatever, what should she have done? Killed him?
Shot him.
Then she would have been okay. I mean, she would have got less years than 20. She would have got 10 or 12. Because that's the wicked thing about here.
Free.
Exactly. Instead of killing, she saved a life, but she got punished.
Right.
You know, things are really twisted in our world.
And then you got to remember, again, here's my culture, just based on my people. We don't do jury duty. See? We use jury duty. I've seen it done. I may be guilty of it myself. We'll say, oh, yeah, go to the job and say, I got jury duty today. And then you go there purposely to get put off jury duty. So now look at all those people that had that law in front of their face who may have been mad based on the conduct of the Zimmerman case. And gave that woman 20.
Right.
They're starting to scream all over the country to African-American people who should be doing jury duty, not doing jury duty. See, because now, guess what? That same perpetuate, where you talk about the system that's locking them up, you're not doing your part. You're supposed to be sitting on that jury. If you're not sitting on that jury, you're supposed to have a jury of your peers. You're not being set on. We
definitely
had a case up here with a woman. She was kicked out for the jury proceedings based on a tattoo she had on her arm.
Wow.
Yeah.
They definitely need to be participating in that and then also getting out and voting, too, and putting the right people in those positions.
Yes, ma'am.
You know,
yes, ma'am.
Every vote does count.
Oh, yeah. You know, but again, that's why I got up myself in a position because when I was a young child, I listened to men tell me, when you go to college, this is why you go to college. You go to college to get them girls. Boy, you know, when I went to college, you know, that's what I do, and so on, so on, so on, so on. And so I evaluate those men, you know, and I'm able, this is how bad it is on my life. I'm able to, based on a man's conversation, I'm able to tell him his age. And every time that I point out, I say, oh, you can't be no more than 53. He was like, what? They'd be like, what? I was like, yeah, because the people that was in my life was 53 that told me that same bull crap. That same statement, you're at the age, you're that many years older than me, you're 53 years old. Now you know I'm 53 because you got the same conversation. And I'll never forget that conversation. Do you know I've never told a kid that? I've never told a kid go to college because of the girls.
Once
I get kicked out, that's never been my conversation. Oh, yeah, when you go to college, you're going to be knocking off. No. No. We're not even having that conversation.
Mm-mm.
At all. You know, hey,
go to college
down here.
Get educated and figure out what
yes.
you want to do with your life.
Yes, I need you to do that. I need you to do that. That's what I'm telling them. That's how I got my son home. I need you to come home and see that your city is coming back. And what you're about to do, you need to bring that to your city. And when he came home for Easter and went back down, because he hadn't been home, and he went downtown and he looked out and he looked over the water, he was like, we got another country in our backyard, Dad. Can't too many cities boast that. I said, that ought to let you know how these people is getting ready to come and change the city, because they know that's two different economies.
Right.
Two different economies in your backyard. And so that's what brought him home. And so that's what we have to do. You know, and I was telling Rob the same thing about him having the talent that he has. I want to try to connect everybody nationwide that's from Detroit. Somehow, somewhere, I'm going to get that figured out. And when I get it figured out, even the people like Motown, everybody like, oh, Motown. And they show that little blue-ass building or something, right? Where Motown originated, right? And it's Hitchville, USA. And the people come in, and they come and they see it. And I said, as soon as you walk out of Hitchville, USA, Lucinda, where is Motown?
Right.
So that was it. You packed up and you moved out there to California, and you, by moving out to California, you killed off a whole wing of talent. There's people out here with oogobs of talent in this city. You killed off a whole wing of talent. Because you're in the drugs,
right.
And we got tons and tons of people gone. Why? Greed. If I move it to California, I always had this imagination point. Imagine if Motown was still in Detroit. Wow.
It would be probably a great thriving city instead of what it is now.
It would be unbelievable. All these businesses packed up. Once they left, all these businesses packed up and left.
Hey, let me ask you something, Shabby. Eminem label ain't even in Detroit. It's labeling in New York.
Oh yeah. Well, you know how that go. You know, his people was here. His entertainment lawyer. He was here. I sat at a conference and listened to them talk. It was called the Idea Conference. It's a very powerful conference. You know, they're trying to bring a record label here. To the city of Detroit.
Eminem might do good if he bought his label there, because it's kind of talented, you know?
The thing is that they're very, very selective. Very selective about, you know, because they have, you got to remember that they have an opinion as Detroiters. We have a negative opinion of Detroiters. Yeah, it's cool that, you know, I did the Chrysler commercial, I represent, and I'm tough, and you know, I'm Eminem, and I'm with Dr. Dre, and, you know, I'm gangster this and gangster that, you know, and the truth of the matter is so many people also write your music and things like that. It's not that Eminem puts his music in front of different writers across the period, you know, so they help him do his music. And, you know, when he got a team like that, you can put together vernacular the way you want to just based upon you the way you rap it. But for the average kid that's here, and Eminem even had a club here and was trying to do some different things, not knocking him, he's a good father. I really would like to talk to him. That's the one thing I want to touch him on, is the fatherhood. Same thing with Kid Rock. You know, Kid Rock and them people, God bless them. You know, I reached out to them, three, four times, left three, four messages. Me and Kid Rock was on that Made in Detroit shirt and the Emmy shirt was on Ron's house at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
On the most watched episode. And so, you know, I've reached out to them as well, but I'm reaching out to them for fatherhood. I ain't never asked them for a dime, brother. I feel that what is it for me is going to be for me. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not reaching out to Eminem them or trying to get to them. I'm reaching out to them for a different message that fatherhood means. You know, yes. See, if they took a turn just on that, it would be more impactful to the city than any record deal they could ever do. You know, how he came here with Jay-Z, and they had, you know, Downtown, and everybody was like, oh, he did the, what's the name of Jay-Z? Man, that's Eminem. Did you nuts? They made so much money While you talking about what he did for the city, it made sense because they did one in Detroit and they did one in New York. Yeah, we're going to do this for the people. That's guaranteed money in a trifling time. Who wouldn't do that? You see what I'm saying?
Right,
that's
just right.
Smart business. That don't have nothing to do with what he was doing for the city. You know, even when he was pricing commercial, that was smart business based upon what the persona is of this kid relative to he really, you know, he's a blessed individual, you know, based upon, you know, his talent. Man, we had the kid, man, let me tell you, then I'm going to be quick on this. We had the kid Vicious. Now, Vicious was just as talented as, and this is a real story, he was just as talented as Eminem, right? We had to deal with DreamWorks. My brother was his manager. We had to deal with DreamWorks, right? And they had him over with DreamWorks. They had this kid over in the apartment with the other manager because he had two managers. He had one in California, one in Detroit. He was the white kid, if you remember, the show Platinum that came on Channel 50, where they had the two brothers. It came on UPN. Now, he was the white rapper in the show called Platinum. So, make a long story short, he caught the deal off of one of a hook that I did called That's What We Call Tripping. It was a hook that I did because I do hooks, you know, messing with different pieces of music. And my brother had him, and, man, literally, they come in, them people come in and buy DreamWorks and shelf this boy. Because guess what? Mm-hmm. The kid, he's 6'3", he gritty, he white, he can flow. He done had Dr. Dre as his beat man. You see what I'm saying? Had he had some Dr. Dre beats or some funk beats like that, then we got a different outcome. But they wanted to hire this kid. They buried this kid, man. Now, that's real fact. You see what I'm saying?
Wow.
He was in the car in California. He did a movie with Nick Cannon. You see what I'm saying? He was with UTA. He did a movie with, what's the blonde girl, her parents, Hilton. Paris Hilton. I was on the movie set for that. You know what I'm saying? They flew me in because he had his name. They wasn't cutting his check. Eminem them come in. Jimmy Iovine them come in and buy DreamWorks, man. And then they sent the palette with that kid's music. His CD was about to come out. His track was called That's What's Up. He was getting ready to go. And they killed him.
Wow.
That kid is right here in the city of Detroit wrestling with his failure.
And that's crazy, man, you know.
That's real talk.
Yeah, so we're going to just send our blessings out to him and, you know, hopefully things are getting in the market for him. And, you know, we just going to say once again, thank you for coming to the show. And we're going to tune out tonight and we're going to have All For You by my man Kendall Day. And, you know, he's popping tonight with us off my sister's label, Grand Slam Records out of Detroit. So we're going to come with my man, Kendall Day. Good night, everyone, and have a great time.
You have a blessed day, brother. Thank you.
Everything is all for you. Feeling like that guy tonight, so
from the ballet. Seven cent bottles of Moscato and a rosé. All I heard was okay, okay.
So baby, what you gonna do for me? Cause
everything is all for you. All for you.
All for you.
All for you.
You
think I don't wanna call tonight? Everything is all for you.
Baby,
it's all for you.
VIP never felt so lovely. Drinks never looked so bubbly. Don't you just love me? From the club to the telly, what's up? Private suite, can't nobody interrupt. Perfect night for the both of us. And this is how it started out. I'm loving everything you do for me. That's why
everything is all for you.
Oh,
for you.
Oh, for you.
Oh, for you. Everything
baby, it's all
for you.
Everything is all for you, baby.
Everything is all for you.
Close the way that it goes.
All for you. You know that it's all for you, baby.
Everything is all for you.
All for you.
Everything I do
is for you.